prepare our kids for middle school, high school, college. We do all the visitations to the school. We do all the prep. They meet all the counselors, the teachers, everything. We do so much prep, especially for these kids to go off to college. Why don't we do that for our senior citizens to get them ready for a type of transitional living, you know, moving out of their house or into another type of facility?
That is a killer point. that's just proliferating the ageism by pretending it doesn't exist.
This is Foxcast OT, a podcast for clinicians made by clinicians. It's brought to you by Fox Rehabilitation. Find out more at foxrehab.org.
Welcome to Foxcast OT. I'm your host, Jimmy McKay. On the program, one of my Fox colleagues, Natalie Pacheco. Natalie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Jimmy. Thanks for having me.
Excited to talk about something that's pretty current. We were interacting online about an article that we found in the New York Times. Marilyn Friedman was the author. The title was The Dementia Heist, and it chronicled a woman getting her mother into a memory care center and a little bit of her time there. It was really the story about one individual family, but we wanted to talk about that just a little bit, and that transition of older adults out of their homes and into different facilities, and where therapists, OTs, PTs, SLPs can play a part in making that transition, hopefully just a little bit easier. What steps could be taken, maybe some tips from your experience, Natalie, into making that transition an easy one?
This is a topic that gets swept under the table in a lot of families. It's something that families just don't want to have to deal with yet. And I've dealt with this like in my own personal family, watching my grandparents having to transition, not just into a memory care unit, but an assisted living facility, and as well as with my clients. I see this a lot. It's a taboo topic of where to put mom or where to put dad. But I really do think that it needs to be prepped earlier. I think the conversation needs to be had between siblings or whoever the caregivers are for parents. And also, if the clients themselves can handle it, if they do not have dementia or if they're in the very, very mild stages, having the serious talks with them and saying, hey, you know, we're looking out for your safety. We want to make sure you're living the best possible way. You're looking at your quality of life. And a lot of senior citizens do not want to leave their homes. And that's totally understandable. It should not have to be forced unless it were a matter of absolute safety. But it's one of those things that you want to put into the heads of your parents or family members just to get them thinking, how can I be living the best possible life? Even though I love my home, I've been it for 50 plus years, is this really the best place for me right now? So in summary, just being able to have that conversation earlier and get the conversation going.
Before we started recording, I told you I wouldn't ask any hard questions, but here comes a hard one. Are you ready, Natalie?
Sure, I'll try.
When is a good time to do that, right? I mean, this is never going to be an easy conversation. You're really starting to, this is really that tipping point on children becoming the caregivers of those people that we love, our parents who cared for us as we grew up. This is really that tipping point. When do you suggest to start having that difficult conversation?
Honestly, it is difficult because I think it's going to depend on every family. I think it's going to depend on the situation. But I think even before the topic of dementia has ever even entered into the stratosphere, like even before there's ever a diagnosis, thinking down the road, just as you would for retirement or financial planning, where do I see my parents living in the next 20 years? They're in a big three-story house in Northeast Philly, or they're in a small rancher in Gibbstown. And yes, I'm giving examples from my own experiences. Is it going to be doable? Are they going to be able to get down the basement to their kitchen? Are they going to be able to handle all the financial bills and things like that coming in within the next 10 or 20 years?
Yeah.
So having that conversation, maybe, I mean, I don't want to pick an age, but early on, maybe like 60s, 70s, when your parents are getting to that point where it's like, okay, they don't have to take care of kids anymore. They just have to take care of themselves. And what's the best way to do that?
Yeah. I mean, it's never going to be an easy conversation to have, but I imagine the earlier you have it, the better, because you're bringing up areas that are touchy, right? You're talking about cognitive health. That's difficult. Finances. That's difficult. Maybe having to leave your home. That's difficult. But the longer you wait, the harder it's definitely going to be. So I love your suggestion of having that conversation earlier and getting your older adult family members involved, helping it makes it their decision. That's got to be a big plus.
Exactly. And the earlier and more involved they feel in the beginning, they're more apt to saying yes than they would when it has to be either forced upon or when it's later on in the stages of the game when they can't think as clearly as they did before and do that problem solving, that higher executive functioning, that reasoning, and have that insight to say, I need to look at all scenarios and think about myself and others.
Planning ahead is definitely going to help you in the long run in this situation. Mm-hmm. Shifting topics just a little bit, the topic of therapeutic lying came up in the article yes. as a strategy. Briefly describe that for the audience and then go into maybe an explanation of where you've seen this come into play.
Absolutely. I thought that was a great term, honestly, to use. I think therapeutic lying can be beneficial. I think it can be good or bad. So let me, I guess, say how it could be used poorly. So a therapeutic lying, I would say, would be either a threat or like kind of out of the blue. Like let's say an adult daughter or son said to their mom or dad, well, if you stay in this house, you're definitely going to die or something like that. Or you have to get out of here because your blood pressure is going to skyrocket and you're not going to be able to live anymore. And doing something kind of like out there, whether it's even true or not. Okay, we do not have to get this severe.
That sounds more like untherapeutic threatening.
Yes, exactly. So, but going to the article, though, they brought her to the hospital. They brought their elderly mother to the hospital for the doctor to kind of check the blood pressure and say, oh, you know, it's looking a little high. We really do have to get you monitored. The best place to do that is in this assisted living facility. Now, that's something that it's a reality check for the mother. It's a reality check, honestly, for the family. And it's also a kinder, a little bit more at ease method to say, this is something we need to keep an eye on. And we're not going to be able to do that if you're in your home. If you want to stay healthy,
right,
we got to go somewhere else, even if it's just for a little bit. And that's also what I say to my clients when they don't want to leave their homes. I'll say assisted living facilities offer these things called respite programs. You can stay for a week, 2 weeks, 30 days, just to see if you like it or get used to it. It's no commitment. And then you can leave after the 30 days, try somewhere else. So that's another type of what could be a therapeutic lying. Let's say you initially bring your mom or dad to be there only for the respite care, but then end up staying there and not going home. That's where you're still doing that lying, if
right.
you will. Does that make sense?
Yeah. In the story in the New York Times, it was done really in very, very small stages, this therapeutic lying. It was first they brought her to the hospital to get her blood pressure checked out. And then it was, we're going to bring you to this place. And she really recounted that painful moment. They had already gone into the memory care center and set up their mother's room with her clothes, with her belongings and her pictures. And they were sitting in their car watching their mother being taken by the ambulance into the facility. And the staff actually recommended that they not be there to make the transition seem more like a regular medical event that had to be terribly painful. But you can see when you do this therapeutic lying in stages, it really eases someone into a situation instead of being jarring.
Yes, exactly. And I give the family a lot of credit for going through with that because I don't know a lot of families that I've worked with personally that either could have that bravery, that courage, or would even have that ability to kind of think that up and like play it all out. I feel like someone would crack in the process. Yeah. That takes a lot of courage.
Yeah. Listening to this story in the New York Times, especially about that situation with therapeutic lying, it really made me think back to when my closest cousin was sending her firstborn off to school and her son didn't want to go. It was in stages.
Uh-huh.
We're just going to go for a little bit and test it out. So it was done in bits. So those two situations seem to mimic when you're trying to talk a kid into going to school and stay there and be happy.
You know what? I'm so glad you mentioned that, Jimmy, because while I was reading the article and reflecting on it, I couldn't help but think of this. Well, it is a type of ageism that we have that we put off these topics and we don't talk about it and then it ends up being forced. But on the flip side, we prepare our kids for middle school, high school, college. We do all the visitations to the school. We do all the preps. They meet all the counselors, the teachers, everything. We do so much prep, especially for these kids to go off to college. Why don't we do that for our senior citizens to get them ready for a type of transitional living, you know, moving out of their house or into another type of facility?
That is a killer point. that's just proliferating the ageism by pretending it doesn't exist or only dealing with it when it's a complete emergency moment. Why aren't we? We're neglecting the fact that aging and being an older adult is a part of life that we hope that you get to.
Exactly. It's a stage of development that everyone goes through, just like everyone looks into, okay, what am I going to do after high school? Why not for when you're aging?
That's brilliant. Last topic I wanted to bring up. Any takeaway points for therapists, OTs, also PTs and SLPs, help clients in this transition time? Clients, their families, their caregivers. Any tips that you'd throw out there in your experience and how to actually make that process a little bit easier?
Sure. Well, I have one specific example that I can bring up. So I had a lady about 6 months ago, was living at home by herself, had gotten into a car accident and was told by her doctor that she couldn't drive anymore. And I had to go in for that evaluation, what they call community mobility evaluation, do the steps of, okay, are you safe to drive? And if not, I need to contact your doctor who needs to contact the DMV to take it away. So I go in and I just notice she's not safe in that house. And she's living by herself and she obviously has dementia. Her family scattered all over the place. So what I did was I contacted daughters and her family, whatever numbers I could get from the client herself. I recommended, and we did it, that they all come to the house and that we have a sit-down meeting together and talk about what I was seeing in the client cognitively. I mean, and we were putting it mildly, some in front of the patient, some of the conversation was separate from the patient, but talking about what I was seeing, what functions she was having impairments with, what I was trying to do to help, but then also what the eventual next steps had to be. And that really was to sell the house, move out of the house, and consider assisted living, if not a memory care center. So really, if you can have that sit-down conversation with the adult children remotely taking care of their parents or directly involved, I think it's a great idea because you get to show them your knowledge, show them that you care, and it gives them the opportunity to maybe vent out their frustration or talk about their concerns that maybe they can't talk about with their parents face to face.
Get in the same room and talk about this and stop whispering about it in hallways and behind backs. And you did You did mention having a couple different conversations. That's perfectly fine. You don't want to make it jarring. So having these side conversations is fine, but have the conversation earlier is better than later seems to be a general theme when talking about this transition process. Yeah. Love that.
And also often, because it's not going to happen in one or two conversations and everything gets settled. It's going to take multiple.
Do you know of any places people can go for more information about something like this or strategies online? Any resources that you use?
Yes, called A Place for Mom. They have a lot of articles really talking about how to have these conversations with your parents, how to go through the financial planning, how to look into local resources. And then because I'm in South Jersey in Gloucester County, I a lot of times contact the Office of Aging. Every state and county office has their own or should have their own Office of Aging department, and they can help you find meal delivery services or maybe transportation services. They might have direct contacts to the assisted living facilities or long-term care facilities in the area, let's say if you don't know of it. So I always go through those resources. I also try to hit up some occupational therapists online who are talking about senior living and how to keep everyone aging in place. So there's this one occupational therapist called Mandy Chamberlain. She has a blog and a website called seniorsflourish.com.
Love that. Natalie, appreciate you taking some time out. Glad we got to discuss this New York Times article. If anybody's looking for it again, December 7th was the release date. The title was The Dementia Heist. A really good first-person account of what that situation was like for a caregiver, a daughter, and her mother. So glad we got to talk about this a little bit for the audience, Natalie. Thanks for taking your time.
Thank you, Jimmy. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Foxcast OT, a clinically excellent podcast. It's brought to you by Fox Rehabilitation. Fox clinicians work hard, love their work, and get the respect they deserve. Sound good? Then you'll love the autonomy to work in your own style and the support you get to achieve excellence. Plus, freedom and flexibility to have a personal life. Whether it's your first day or you've been around for a while, your contribution is acknowledged and rewarded. That's what makes Fox a success. Happy, well-trained clinicians make great healthcare. Are you a fit for Fox? Find out now at foxrehab.org.